All right, it's the Morning Wake Up Call. Neil A. Caruso and Brianna Barson with you on this Thursday morning. So warm up with us as we get you through until 9 o'clock. Well, we're going to welcome in our first guest this morning, who is corporate communications consultant and journalist Chris Orcutt to talk about alternative energy. Chris, how are you doing this morning?
Doing very well, Neil. Thank you very much to you and Brianna for having me on your program.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And, Chris, let's jump right into this. I know how fervent you are about helium-3 as a potential alternative energy solution. How does helium-3 compare and differ from other current energy solutions?
Okay. This is kind of intricate, so I'll try to go quickly.
Sure.
First, I want to make clear, Neil, that I'm a novelist, not a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
I originally learned about helium-3 while doing research for my PI mystery novel, A Truth Stranger Than Fiction. And A Truth Stranger Than Fiction it features my PI, Dakota Stevens. He's based in New York. And in the course of this investigation, he uncovers a secret involving alternative energy and helium-3. Helium-3 is an isotope of common helium,
mm-hmm.
You know, the stuff we put in balloons and that we breathe in to make our voices sound funny. And when we say it's an isotope, we say that because it's missing one neutron. And this missing neutron allows it to be joined with other helium-3 molecules in nuclear fusion. You know, what we have in nuclear reactors on Earth today is nuclear fission, where we're splitting matter like uranium or plutonium. Problem there is that it produces nuclear waste. There is no nuclear waste with this type of nuclear fusion, and there are it's not radioactive, no radioactive waste. And it doesn't produce gases like carbon dioxide that are contributing to climate change. Just to give your listeners an idea of the numbers here, 1 ton of helium-3, these are approximations,
mm-hmm.
1 ton of helium-3 is the equivalent energy of 50 million, with an M, barrels of crude oil. 25 tons of helium-3 would be enough to power the entire United States for a year.
Wow.
Those are some serious numbers here, but is this a viable alternative to fossil fuels? I mean, why hasn't anyone pursued this?
Well, this is a very good question, Brianna. It is a viable alternative. Here's the thing. It's very rare. Helium-3 is very rare on Earth, but it's plentiful on the moon. And the issue is that the sun produces helium-3 as a waste product. Our magnetic field on Earth repels it, but it's been embedded in the moon's soil for billions of years. So it's very plentiful on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
We in the United States we're the only nation on Earth to do manned moon missions. So we know, we have the technology and we have the know-how to take men and women up to the moon and establish a mining colony, and we're very good at pulling things out of the ground. One estimate that I've read is that it would be costly, you know, and it,
right.
One conservative estimate is that it would cost $1 trillion with a T to establish a mining colony and be bringing back and begin to reap benefits from the helium-3. But I don't think this is a case of one government just dumping money into a solution. I think this is complex enough, and it's important enough to the history and to the future of the entire planet that we're going to see multiple nations and multiple corporations get on this bandwagon.
So in other words, this is a global effort.
It's going to have to be a global effort. I mean, there are private companies pursuing this right now. There's one in the Silicon Valley called Moon Express,
mm-hmm.
and it's headed by a billionaire, Naveen Jain. And they recently hired Buzz Aldrin's son, Andrew, as president. I don't know if it's a titular situation, but it was you know, I think it was meant to show potential investors their seriousness. He wants to get his company to the moon, to be the first corporate entity to begin to mine the moon, not just for helium-3, but for many of these rare earth metals that are necessary in the electronics and semiconductor industries. So, you know, it's not just about helium-3 that makes this an attractive option. It's that there are other resources on the moon that we could use down here.
When you start talking about mining the moon, I mean, for some people, that sounds like something out of a novel. I mean,
right.
You're a novelist. I'm sure you can understand that. But, I know you mentioned that private companies are starting to look into this, but how serious do you think governments would take something like this?
Well, I'll tell you exactly how serious they are, Brianna. Right now, China has a probe encircling the moon. Right now. I mean, this very moment. And they are scheduled to have that probe touch down sometime this month. They are going to collect rocks and soil samples, bring them back to Earth for further analysis. And then they're scheduled to go back in 2017. And this is all with the long-term aim of establishing a lunar mining colony. They are 100% on top of this, and they're really ahead of the United States in this. They have one of the world's premier fusion helium-3 scientists working for them. The thing is, this isn't a pie-in-the-sky Star Trek science fiction concept. The University of Wisconsin-Madison has a fusion technology institute, and they've actually joined two helium-3 molecules together to produce a tremendous amount of energy, proving that this can be done. And there's also another company in the United States that's working on something similar, Lockheed Martin, the jet company, famous for jet engines, mm-hmm. has been working on what they call a compact fusion reactor. Now, this wouldn't be powered by helium-3 under their model. It would be powered by heavy hydrogen, isotopes of hydrogen. But their concept is to create basically this large generator that could sit in the back of a person's fit in someone's pickup truck, producing enough power for 80,000 people.
Chris Orcutt here on the Morning Wake Up Call is professional writer and corporate communications consultant. Now, Chris, you mentioned China. Are any other countries considering using helium-3 as an energy source or other alternative energy sources?
Yes. I mean, Russia, you know, has, and we have to wonder to what extent this is just bravado, you know, Russia not wanting to be left out of discussion about this. But a Russian company, I'm forgetting the name of it now, has said that give us $9.4 billion and we'll build you a moon colony and we'll bring helium-3 back to Earth, I imagine, all while they're, you know, smoking Russian cigarettes in their space helmets. You know, I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of credence to that. And my research for my novel, They're kind of on the lower end. The two major players here are China and the United States, and there is some talk among the European Union of the European Union and corporations there starting to enter the fray.
Wow, very interesting. Now, why do you think that we need to talk about more energy sources, and do you see this as a potential problem in regards to pushing development with it, you know, potentially being blocked to protect government or corporate interests?
Absolutely. I mean, I have to believe that there has been some blocking going on, and let me explain why.
Sure.
The U.S. government has known about the existence of helium-3 from the Apollo missions when, you know, going back as late as 1969, Apollo 11, when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon, they brought back moon samples, and each manned moon mission after that, they were also bringing back samples of rocks and soil from the moon. And when they analyzed these after the fact, back on Earth, they discovered this relatively high concentration of helium-3, along with other rare earth metals. Now, the thing is, the government has known about this. They've known that this exists up there as a resource. Now, jump ahead to 2007. In 2007, I saw a documentary about lunar mining and helium-3 fusion, and it was fascinating. And right around that time, George W. Bush, then President George W. Bush, said, we're going to make a new push to go to the moon. And the subtext there was, the unspoken meaning behind it, reason behind it, was to go up and mine for helium-3. Well, we all know what happened in the world of fossil fuels in the next couple of years, and that's the discovery of the Bakken Formation in North Dakota and Montana and part of Saskatchewan. The Bakken Formation is where the fossil fuels, oil and natural gas, are trapped in shale, and they're using the controversial process of hydraulic fracturing, or fracking, to release these fossil fuels from the rock.
Right.
And so my point here is that when they started pulling vast quantities of fossil fuels out of the ground beginning in about 2010, all talk of helium-3 ceased. And you can only see it now on obscure, you only see talk about it now on obscure scientific journals.
Wow, very interesting. So good stuff, Chris Orcutt, our professional writer, corporate communications consultant, and journalist. Chris, thanks so much for coming on this morning and talking about this.
My pleasure. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Brianna.
Have a great day.
You too.
Be well, Chris.
Bye-bye.